Damn, I forgot to say vibraphone. I should have said that as soon as I picked up the Skype thing. I should have said vibraphone.
All right, we can pretend.
You can't eat that roll.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What do you think? You know, wait for it.
International detective dragons from outer space.
Welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to Skype Chat 7. For this installment, pull up a chair, put up your feet, pour yourself a beverage, and listen in as we hear from George Robb of the Geologic Podcast. That will get underway soon after my introductory flim-flammery and argy-bargy, but please, first, hear this. Back in a bit.
There's a new podcast called The Geologic Podcast. A balanced, calm, rational look at the world and all of the people in it.
Motherfucker! Four notes away!
Alright, here's the deal. There's this guy, his name is George Robb, and he's got this Geologic Podcast. Believe me, the last thing you want to do is listen to this garbage. I mean, look at the kind of things he does. He's got this one bit, it's called Religious Moron of the Week.
Religious Moron of the Week.
Then he does this stupid bit where his grandmother talks about entertainment news.
It must be time for Grandma's Entertainment Report.
Plus, this George character's got some strange fascination with animals where he talks about them in a thing called Interesting Fauna.
Interesting Fauna.
I mean, it's all just so stupid. The last thing you want to do is go to www.geologicpodcast.com and listen to this garbage. Believe me, your time will be better spent making yourself a sandwich or something.
www.geologicpodcast.com.
And so, welcome. Welcome, yes, it's Skype Chat 7. And a terrific one it is. I was fortunate enough to get time on Skype with George Robb. And folks, it was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure. It was a triple F Skype chat. A 3F Skype chat. Is that any kind of a rating system that I've ever introduced before or made use of? No, because I just made it up this afternoon and was all proud of myself. What do they stand for? Fascinating, fun, and fast. It was certainly fascinating. It was a whole lot of fun, and boy, did it go by quickly. And now that I'm done with my alliteration for the show, I'll move on. Who is George Robb? I don't know. I mean, I only spoke with him for an hour and a half. But I have listened to his podcast, and having spoken with him and listened to his podcast, you're going to have to find out who he is for yourself, but these are my impressions. This is the list that we can mix up with facts and impressions, and I hope the fellow that's rebuilding his house across the street isn't coming over on this audio, but I'm just going to barrel on through so that we can get to this interview. George Robb is a drummer. He's a guitarist. He's a master of vocal characterizations and accents and dialects. He's a fan of science, a critical thinker, a staunch atheist. He is, of course, a podcaster, but I think above all else, what has to make the top of my list of impressions of who George Robb is that he's a professional entertainer who's really got it together. I'm recalling comments I made in IDD FOS number 14. about those rare individuals in the performing arts, actors, artists, musicians, all those who have the chops and the courage and the drive to earn their living in the creative world. He's in those ranks. He's the real deal. Would I recommend trying out the Geologic Podcast for your regular listening lineup? Of course I would. It entertains me mightily. However, it certainly might not be something that regular listeners of IDDFOS are used to. Regular listeners to this show know that my coverage of topics and questions is quite tame. Not so with George Robb. You'll know that many of the avenues that we explore, well, my treatment of them is almost bland in its neutrality much of the time. The most controversial and interesting observations and opinions more often than not come from you, the listener, and I pass them on via this podcast. So I'll just mention this. If you are a prude, if you are deeply religious or dogmatic in whatever faith you follow, if you are hypersensitive to explicit content and adult language, well, then the Geologic Podcast may not be in your comfort zone. It may, in fact, be a good running start followed by a mental kick to your ideologic groin. Do I say this as a warning? No. If anything, I say it as a selling point. If you're anything like the above, then download and listen to the show. I mean, if you're listening to this show, then you're an adult, and you certainly don't need any protecting from me, and I won't presume to do so. I don't know what's good for you. I only know what I consider to be talent. And whether you agree with what he has to say or not, George Robb is a very talented man indeed. Now, before we get underway, I just want to get a few points covered. Errors of omission or bits of confusion that I discovered when I was going over the interview a couple of times, possibly not even in this order. I may have given the impression that Bells in the Bat Free is hosted by the Encaffeinated One. No, in fact, the Encaffeinated One has his own show in Canada, a radio show and a podcast called The Weird Show. It was the Encaffeinated One that discovered and recommended to IDDFOS the Bells in the Bat Free podcast, which is hosted by John Bell. Just wanted to clear that up. The Encaffeinated One is another of those podcasters that I admire a great deal, not only for his content, but because, again, for the fact that he puts out a show every week. I don't know, maybe it's my schedule, but that just really impresses me because I know how much time this stuff takes. Anyway, I wanted to clear that up, make sure there's no confusion there before you hear it. Hardcore History. I could not recall the name of the podcaster that does that show, and it is, in fact, Dan Carlin. So, congrats to him. And thank you to James Stubbs for discovering and recommending Hardcore History to all of us here at IDDFOS, again, through the forums. And I can't give out credit where credit is due and leave out Dickie of the Stealth Geek podcast, because his playing the Geologic podcast promo, which you heard at the top of this show, reminded me that I was subscribing to it. I had some hardware difficulties and lost a great deal of stuff, including the RSS feed. And he played the promo. It reminded me, oh yeah, the Geologic podcast. And I started subscribing again and enjoying the show, and here we are at Skype Chat 7, fortunate enough to have a chat with George Robb. So, two more points before we get underway. A special hello and a thank you to regular listeners of the Geologic podcast. Thank you for visiting. Hope you enjoy the interview. And the interview covers a variety of topics. I tried to find natural breaking points for punctuating the chat with some podcast promos. I hope they don't prove to be too distracting, but they seem to be good little bridges to get from one section of what we were talking about to another. I generally do that for all the Skype chats, and they seem to work okay in this one as well. Alrighty then. No further delays. Here we go. Hope you enjoy Skype Chat 7 with George Robb.
Oh, my God.
Greetings, sir.
Oh, my God. Multitasking. Oh, God.
Uh-oh. Okay. Breathe. Breathe.
Oh, okay. Just closing some windows here.
Oh, shit. Hey, I can call back, man, if you...
No. I'm all...
It's cash.
I'm into it. Oh, yes. I'm about as formal as a bunch of teenagers hanging out in front of the 7-Eleven.
Sweet.
Where are we here? Let me look at my little thing. It's George Robb.
Greetings.
Holy crap. Hi, how are you?
How you doing, man? Good to hear from you. Or good to hear to you, from you, with you.
It's
yes.
It's Skyping.
I know, yeah. What is the, I don't even know active Skype verb would be.
I've said this a couple other times, I think, in other Skype chats. It's like, you know what? The telephone's been invented. Why is this so unique?
Yeah, right. Yeah, why? Because I think because the screen is open in front of you. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it's like that. We're still waiting for the video part of it to catch up to the. I don't know. Who knows?
Probably. Yeah.
Who knows?
It's kind of like it's. Oh, it ties in with this whole podcasting thing. This whole mini instant. You can't even say instant, can you? There's no such thing as an instant celebrity.
Right.
Yeah, the whole situation.
Yeah, maybe it's like that. There's no running money tally in your head either. That might affect you somehow. Like that you're not thinking that you're paying for this thing, second per second, as you do with the phone.
This also is a plus.
Subconscious thing, maybe.
This also definite is plus. A definite plus.
Oh yeah.
Let me look at my little power grammo thing here and see if in fact I am. Oh good, there's a counter going. That must mean I'm recording.
Hey, cool.
That's slick. I've also got this little. A battery-operated, steam-powered gizmo stuck up against my right ear that I use as my backup.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah,
well, that's
really.
Clever.
Low-tech, taped in place. If I take the headphones off, I'll pull some hair away with it. So I
okay,
kinda
cool.
Got it.
Are you, like, leaning to one side, too? You walk in circles when you have that on? Cool.
Yeah, like the extra heavy earring on one ear.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't happen. Wow, first and foremost, how are you?
Excellent, my friend.
Good deal.
Wet and slushy. We've had quite a little weekend here. I know you're just up the road from me, up in Edison, so I'm sure we've had similar weather over the last couple of days. But
yeah,
my place tends when it's really cold. My place tends to get cold. Otherwise, it's okay. So just the last day or so has been that can't quite heat all of the geologic headquarters to where I want it to be. But that's okay. Just put the extra sweater on and I'm fine.
Yeah, it happens over here too. Actually, one room of the house. The whole rest of the house seems to be kind of okay, a little,
Uh-huh.
And then there's that one room. You open the door, and it's...
Must be the ghosts.
Well, obviously, yeah. When you've got a low-energy situation like that, and only... I mean, it's isolated like that. You get out the meters, and you bring in the...
Oh, of course.
Bring in the short lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good. All right, excellent.
Yeah. And yourself? Things all right?
I had an okay day.
Good.
I confess I'm knocking on wood, because the day ain't over yet.
That's true, yeah. We still have what? Yeah. 5 hours, far enough to go, so yeah. All right, cool.
All right, let's...
So what can I do you for, sir? What's going on? What's the topic du jour?
The topic du jour is almost, well, not even almost. It's always very much up to the person that's on the end of the line that's... In the Skype chat, you are Skype chat number 7, or as I list them, 007.
Ooh.
Yeah.
James.
You ended up with the license to kill. How do you like that one?
Yes.
Most excellent.
I'm gonna both shaken and stirred, so it's perfect.
So George Robb of the Geologic Podcast honors us with Skype Chat 7, and let's get the important stuff out of the way first. First of all, you can find the Geologic Podcast at www.geologicpodcast.com. If you are interested in taking samples of the Geologic Podcast, most recently, George Robb has posted in episode 51.1, most recent collection of Best of the Geologic Podcast. Prior to that, if you want to dig into the September 2007 archives, you can find episode 31.1. So that's 51.1 and 31.1 for little collections. Hmm. But go ahead and check check the show out in whatever order you want to, find the feed, and there it goes.
Yeah, we did these best ofs just to kind of, for exactly that reason, because some people had wanted to, wanted to recommend the show to someone, and they kept saying, you know, what should I recommend as an episode for someone to start at? Because, I mean, you can start at the beginning and work your way through. But I figured, you know what, let me make a little best of. So the best ofs are sort of all the sketches that I've done over the last year or so, or first 6 months and then second 6 months, which give you a flavor for the show in general. So that is a good place to start if you want to hop in. But you can dive in wherever, anywhere anyone would like is totally cool.
And I got to tell you, those, well, the thing that drew me back to the Geologic Podcast again and again was just the impressive quality of those sketches. It's just some amazing work. It's really amazing work. Let me just go with, first of all, I'll ask you about Geologic Podcast in general, but I'm going to start. Me.
Yes, of course.
I'm going to start with...
It's all
about what I want to talk about. I wanted to come up with just a few things to start off with, and three things that I find most impressive about that show. One, of course, is the incredible vocal range and characterizations that you perform from Moisha to Mortimer to Londoners to Liverpool. What is it, Liverpoolians?
Liverpudlians.
Liverpudlians.
Yeah.
Southern aerospace defense designers. You do it all. And
well, thank you.
It's superb. The editing skill and the impeccable timing to make all those personas interact so seamlessly is just incredible. And something that folks need to consider, and they probably do, especially if they've tried it themselves. I know I've done a few myself, and some of my listeners have sent in some really super work, is that you've got to perform in anticipation of your own reactions and your own responses. Right. Along with the editing skill. So that's the second thing that I find impressive. And the third, and probably the most impressive thing, is a reality-based miracle, in my opinion. And that is that you've done a show a week for a year.
Yeah, somehow I pulled it out of the old sphincter. You know what? There are people that do multiple shows a week. There's some people that do a show every day, you know?
Oh, yeah.
What's nice is that this format allows me to sometimes do 40 minutes, sometimes do an hour, sometimes do whatever. So I never feel like I need to fill it out with something just for some kind of a time constraint. You know, not that I have, but if I ever did a week where I just did a 20-minute show, it would be okay. You know, I'd just be disappointing maybe myself or something. But there's no real specific need for it to be any length. As it turns out, most shows tend to be around 45 to 50 minutes is usually kind of the average where it works out, sort of unplanned. So yeah, you know, to do it once a week, it just became a challenge, and it became part of the routine, you know, part of the routine that I do. And that, thank you for saying those things. That's very nice. I mean, what's in my corner is GarageBand, which is what I use. So for timing wise, to be able to manipulate the audio so easily in GarageBand really makes it that much easier. You know, my hero.
Oh yeah.
Is Stan Freberg. I don't know how familiar you are with his work, but he was a guy from the 50s who did a radio show. He was one of the last main radio shows on CBS radio. He took Jack Benny's spot.
I think.
And he used to do what I do, but he did it live on radio. You know, without any editing. He did it with reel-to-reel tape. He would record his own voice. He would react back to it. He would do it with a band, with a studio audience, with other actors. You know, so what I'm doing is like just the merest shadow of what that guy can do, or someone like a Harry Shearer, or the people that work on The Simpsons, you know, who really have these incredible vocal talents and vocal facility. You know, again, GarageBand is just amazing to use, that I can select things and work on the timing. You mentioned the timing of it, and that's something that I've discovered doing this, is how literally tenths of a second can affect a joke.
Oh yeah.
You know, right. And it's incredible that if you just pause just a half of a second more or less, you can make something funnier or less funny. That's something that's been so instructive in the, you know, the sort of the school of comedy, or whatever you want to call it, without being too pretentious about yourself, but that idea of constructing a joke and getting that timing. It's been so much fun to learn how to affect something in a more humorous way, you know, by just timing something, yeah. Something silly like that, you know.
Well, you've got all these things. You've got a long running back. You've got all these things coming together at the same time. Essentially, you've got a lifetime. Essentially, I mean, from your early teen years to now, having heard the Stan Freberg, right. Having heard the Python, having heard the
exactly.
Fire Sign Theater, anybody else that you listen to,
right.
I don't know you. I don't know whether you were like me, but I would play those albums over and over and over and over and over again.
Course. And imitate them. And
yeah. I sure didn't get any dates in high school, so I had to do something.
And here we are, all this time later.
And all this time later,
talking into a microphone and a computer. Yes,
yeah. So, but you've got that. I mean, you've got that built into your head. I mean, you've got
right.
And then
right.
along comes the software, whether it's GarageBand or Audacity, or I use one of the Sony packages. The technology now catches up let me slow down a little bit. It's not as if you haven't attempted to do this before without the PC.
I mean, I was doing this on an 8-track, cassette recorder kind of thing, where I would just, you know, you stop recording, rewind a little bit, go to a second track, and then just kind of dive in. Same idea. I mean, I would even do it when I was a kid. I would do it just with a single. I think one of the earliest book reports I did. This was like in sixth grade, not book reports, but early book report, but one of the earliest multimedia sort of book reports was a Beowulf presentation where it was all different. You know, I assigned different kind of pop stars to be the different characters. It was awful. I'm sure it was terrible, but you know, like Cyndi Lauper was Grendel's mom, and it was awful. It was really awful. But I have this distinct memory of just kind of like, you know, stopping and starting and jumping in with different voices and trying to do stuff that way. So yeah, it's just nice that I can do one a week now, and probably the amount that I can do is solely because GarageBand allows you to work so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the digital medium allows you to work so quickly, you know, and not worry about destructive editing, that, you know, if I mess up or something or record on the wrong channel, you know, option Z, and you're back to where you were. Whereas when you were dealing with analog stuff, if you accidentally record over something, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, so that's nice that it's facilitated the speed, you know. But yeah, you're right. We've all done hell. I'd be doing this on wax cylinders if I had to, probably.
I was you were talking about you mentioned Beowulf.
Mm.
I just one of those sniglets, one of those 70s sniglets came into my head. Monster Grendel's tastes are plainish. Breakfast, just a couple Danish.
Excellent.
But it makes you I wish I'd thought of it. It makes you like you said, it makes you appreciate just the incredible genius of the of those early radio and recording artists that
right.
That had to do it on the fly.
That's something that you know, the Python guys that I just you mentioned Python.
Mm.
You still go back and they were so good at the performance of it. You know, that you can take the strangest of material, and if it's performed right, it can be that much better. Whereas you can take the best written material, and if it's performed poorly, it's just it doesn't matter how well it's written. You know, so that those guys were not only brilliant writers, but just brilliant performers. You know, and again, Freberg and you know, all the people you watched, the people you mentioned. It's inspiring, and I constantly feel like I'm just trying to do a crappy version of, you know, again, a Harry Shearer sketch or something, you know.
Hell, but by the same token, you're coming up with your own stuff, and it's new, and it's just
trying. Yeah, thank you. Know, is there anything new?
Yeah, is there I don't know. Is there anything new under the sun?
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
Oh, it's all been done before. Yes, but not by you.
Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
So that's the thing. Yeah. I think one of the first emails I sent you, the subject line of the email was, "You like my boat? It's called Popeye."
Popeye. Right. Exactly.
All of those bits.
Watch for your rowing. Whoops! Watch for your rowing.
That's right.
Yeah.
How much in sound?
Well, got hammer Swiss and tuna salad.
How much for the tuna
salad? You
know,
that kind of a thing. That little breath that's in there. You know, again, this is all Freberg, if you're not aware. But the chance, the ability to let the joke breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, that thing of, well, I don't know. What do you think? You know, it's like, wait for it, you know, it's such a skill to be able to be patient And take your time. And again, that's what Just Stan is just so good. And I'm constantly stealing that whole, I suppose, you know, that kind of a thing. Or the whole, I mean, even the lovely soccer girl commented on the, you know, because all the time I'll just say, you know, something will happen and I'll go, yes. Which is just, that's Freeberg. That is just, you know, classic Freeberg, you know. Just wait, pause, say something stupid, pause and go, yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so she says, you know, because I finally gave her some Freeberg stuff to check out. And she's like, oh, my God, that's totally you. And I'm like, no, it's totally Stan. I just have no, you know, I just steal from as many disparate subjects as possible and kind of distill it into the geologic thing. But
yeah. I have a feeling we both steal from the best. So
that's the thing.
That's the thing to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, excellent. Good deal. I love all of his stuff. One of my other favorites is his panel of cartoon critics.
Oh, tell me about it.
They were arguing
about 1954, you know, and they're arguing minutia. It's like pre-internet chat room, you know, dissemination.
It's like Captain Kirk is better than Captain Kirk is better than Picard. Exactly. Only in this case, it's I'd like to see
Tarzan and Little
Tarzan
Orphan
drop a leopard with
Tarzan, please, Little Orphan Annie, she's solving mysteries every week, please. Oh, please, Tarzan, yeah, go back to the apes, go back to the.
I've got a doctorate in.
That's right.
Guy that just keeps.
Yeah, in Dick Tracy or whatever. Yeah.
I don't know, folks. If you're not familiar with this stuff, you owe it to yourself. I'm sorry. I don't mean to go on appreciating Stan Freeberg and going into specific bits that people might not be familiar with.
Folks. Right. I know it's the worst thing to do, but
if you're not familiar with it, folks, you just owe it to yourself. You are cheating yourself so much if you don't dig this stuff up and give it a good listen.
He's so ahead of the curve. He's, you know, not only in terms of the hipness and sort of irony of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you listen to it and it's funny, and then you listen to it and you realize this is 1955. Mm-hmm. You know, and you get blown away by how hip it is. And he was one of the first, and he lost the radio show because he wouldn't have a cigarette company be his sponsor, because he hated the fact that, you know, these cigarette companies, which were, he knew were causing cancer essentially, or they were at least were bad for you. He didn't want to have, you know, Marlboro be his sponsor, or whoever, Winchester be his sponsor.
And in the 50s and early 60s, you couldn't tune into a radio show or see a television broadcast that didn't have at least half the performers with a cigarette in their hand.
Right, right. Just so ahead of the curve. And it's his genius, I think, has diminished a little bit in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, which how could it not, you know? But he's still just that's someone I would love to just even just say hello to at some point, just to say hi.
Oh, yeah, he'd be an incredible person to meet. I even liked his work in Family Dog.
Right.
Just as a, you know.
Yeah,
and occasionally keep the stupid house from being robbed.
Right.
Just classic stuff. He involves himself in the best stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, back to me.
Not about that
back
guy.
Back to my particular form of genius.
Let's get back to the now, the today. What's happening now? The bleeding edge of technology.
Right.
How did you get into podcasting? How many times have you heard that?
Yeah, no, it's actually a great question, because it was my, I just talked about this. It was my friend Slough, the inimitable Slough, who's my engineer, who owns B Sharp Studios in Astoria, Queens, where I record all my records, all my albums when I'm not podcasting. When I'm not doing my other stuff, when I'm recording my original music, I do it up at his studio. And he's in the last 10, 11 years has kind of become one of my closest and best friends. And a couple of years ago, he said, George, podcasting. And I said, what? What are you talking about? And he said, this is the future. You should check this out. And he's blind. So he was kind of on the front end of the podcasting curve, because to him, podcasting is not only TV, but it's, you know, newspapers and it's books and it's everything for him, because he's all about the audio forms of entertainment.
What an explosion of choice that is.
Oh, that was the thing. He was, you know, all of a sudden he had, I mean, there was always things available, but all of a sudden it went from, you know, a couple hundred podcasts to a couple thousand to, you know, tens of thousands now that he can kind of really pick and choose. Mm. And he said, you know, there are these two guys, there's these two cats down in Atlanta somewhere. They have this show called Skepticality, It's Derek and Swoopy. You know, you should check them out because they're kind of on the same page as you are with your skeptical thought. And, you know, maybe you should send them some tunes or see what happens. So I sent them a package, totally cold, sent them a thing, you know, listen to some of their shows, sent them a package, said, I like what you guys do. You might like my music. We're kind of on the same page. I don't know. You know, I had no idea, shot in the dark. And Derek ended up, you know, calling me or writing me and saying, hey, we'd love to interview you. And that was it. And that was my introduction. Then I went to Dragon Con, which is a big science fiction fantasy meeting thing, last year, Dragon Con 06, and met a lot of people that were podcasting. And my friend Slough again just kept saying, you know, George, you just got to start. You guys should just do something, you know, even once a month or something, because you've got all these ideas all the time. And it's just even you talking about crap would be fun. Because I, in concert, often I just tell kind of stories, like the opening spiel that usually happens on the show. I do that kind of thing in concert too. And he said, yeah, I mean, you have all this, you know, you could just even do songs if you want, or you could do whatever you want. Finally, after Dragon Con, I said, you know what, you're right, let's start it. So we figured out how to get an RSS feed and figured out all the details of it and just started. And I kind of told myself, all right, I want to try to see if I can do this for a year, if I can do one a week for a year and see what we come up with. And here we are. Oh, you still there?
Mute button.
Oh, cool. Okay. I thought maybe I hung up on you. Whoops.
No.
Good. I'm pontificating here thinking, no, I'm probably pontificating to a dial tone or whatever.
No,
Skype
no.
Equivalent is.
I have to remember that I have this goofy little inline mute button thing here.
Okay, cool.
Phew. Yeah, here we are. And not only after a year of podcasting, but now you're on at the same venue, on the same bill. What is the situation with the Amazing Randy and that?
Oh,
whole...
man. That was from Dragon Con this past year, Dragon Con 07. I met some of the people that are involved with the Amazing Randy and the Skeptics Society, skeptic.org, I guess, or randy.org and skeptic.com. Mm-hmm. Jeff Wagg, who is an editor, writer for James Randy, kind of met him, and I somehow accidentally was listed under the science track at the Dragon Con talks.
Yeah.
I think someone saw that, you know, my record company, my little record company is called Geologic Records.
Mm-hmm.
So I think someone saw that and said, oh, this guy's a geologist. We'll have him do a talk on geology. And so I got this email saying, like, oh, we have you down for, you know, a Sunday morning talk, 45 minutes about how we know the Earth is older than 6,000 years.
And you rose to the occasion.
And I said, you know, initially I was like, oh, God, I got to tell them, no, I'm just a dumb guitarist from Bethlehem, you know. And then I thought, hey, wait a minute, screw it, I can do this. Why not? You know,
yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it with the approach of not a scientist, but a fan of science. And I did it and had a blast, had an absolute blast doing it, and was very honest about it. That was the first thing I said. I said, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't have a degree in this. I don't have anything, but I'm a fan of this. And this shows what you can kind of learn on your own if you're just interested in a topic. You know, not that it was any kind of, you know, groundbreaking, forgiving the pun, groundbreaking stuff I was doing, but it was just fun. And I guess the response was pretty positive. And Jeff got in touch with me and he said, you know, we've got this amazing meeting that happens out in Vegas. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah. So I sent him a bunch of things and I'm doing a concert now. And to just be listed with, you know, James Randi and Michael Shermer and Jamie Heineman from the Mythbusters, and the guy that runs the Hayden Planetarium, Dyson, I forget his first name. Oh, my God, to be on that same page,
that
oh, my Sagan,
so cool.
Rather, to be on the same page as those people, you know, even peripherally listed, it's just, it's mind-blowing, and I'm so excited about it that I can't even get excited, because it'll completely occupy every synapse in my head if I really think about it for a second. So I'm kind of putting it off.
Yeah, if you let it sink in, it's going to take complete control of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's in, excuse me, that's in June, which I'm
oh, wow, that's coming up, huh?
Yeah, June 20th. I'm doing a show, and then Jeff said he might sort of insert me in some other things, some other places. And from all indications, these couple of days is such a kind of island of critical thinking and similar thinking, and everyone there is kind of on the same page, and it's just so much fun. And I got a chance to, you know, again, just to be in a room with James Randi let alone maybe even have a chance to talk to him or have him like see, oh yeah, you're the guy that's doing that show, and just be able to go, I like you, you're smart, you know, that would be really cool.
Oh, slick.
Yeah.
That folks can find information about that link from your site, right?
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's.
I'll be linking to that constantly. Believe me. Yeah, yeah. It's randy.org is kind of the home base for all that, and if you put in an amazing meeting, that comes up in all kinds of Google searches too. So.
God.
And it's
excellent.
In Vegas. If you're out in Vegas, come on by.
That is so excellent. Well, yeah. What do you say there? Break a leg. Yeah, I guess it.
Break a whatever.
Have
break
a blast.
A wheel. Yeah.
Have
bet
a
on
blast.
Black or whatever. I'm excited. I'm very excited.
Good deal.
And then again, DragonCon comes up also, and Balticon comes up also. There's a Baltimore sci-fi convention that I go to as well, and do a performance there. It's always lots of fun. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that 2006 Dragon Con wasn't the one where you, the 2007 one was the one where you were actually performing.
I did a live podcast.
You did a live podcast. I know you did the Geologic. you gave the Geologic lecture.
Right.
You did the performance. That was one of your podcasts, which was hysterical. By the
way, that was so much fun to be in front of people. It was so much fun. It was such a different thing. I mean, I love doing it here alone.
And incorporating into your new intro was excellent too. That was
That was fun. That was to have people actually responding and to be able to use that every week now in the introduction is really cool. That was fun.
We've forgotten something.
Yeah, you know, I kind of taught everyone before we started. I said, all right, this is your part. This is what you're gonna do, and it was fun.
Damn, I forgot to say vibraphone. I should have said that as soon as I picked up the Skype thing. I should have said vibraphone.
All right, we can pretend.
Well, I'll edit it in earlier on.
There you go.
We'll
perfect.
Just use
perfect.
Digital stuff. Okay, so yeah, and also 2007 was when you met Soccer Girl in person.
That's right.
DragonCon.
Yeah. Also, because you know, again, Slough, my friend, said, you know, there's this, and he told me this probably a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. There's this interesting podcaster. You should check her out. She's kind of like, you know, she does songs and kind of quirky stuff like you do, and she's an atheist like big time, and you know, a critical thinker, and she curses and. And she's naked occasionally, so you know, you have a lot in common. and I kind of sort of filed it in the back of my head, and then sort of saw her at a party, and was like, "Ooh, hey, that's that girl that Slough was talking about," and we kind of connected, and it's nice.
Good deal, most excellent.
Yeah, talented, smart little lady.
And collaborative work with anybody else that can lend. See, you're smart enough to not try a woman's voice when you know you need a woman's voice.
Oh, right, yeah. Again, that's something the Python's taught me, that whenever you need to do actual, like a romantic thing or a sort of a desirous thing involving that part, you know, that characteristic, you almost have to go with a real female. I mean, you can do kind of the Pepper Pot rat bag women.
Ah, yes, you're great, super, yes. If it laid an egg, it would fall down the back of the television set.
Yeah, right. That one.
Yeah. They stamp them when they're small.
Yeah. What happens when they molt?
Lions don't molt.
No, but penguins do. There, I run. People
penguins
will never
run you logically.
People will never forgive me if I start doing this. Cause
that's it, man. I know.
They've heard it 1,000 times, and they don't need to hear it from me.
Oh, forget about it.
At least I'm pretty positive.
A piston engine. What'd you buy that for? It was a bargain. Oh. Okay. How do you cook that? You don't cook it. You can't eat that raw.
Yeah. So anyway, you can do that. You can do that yourself.
That you can get
away
with.
But you can't really do.
Oh, I think you're sexy.
You know, it just doesn't work that way. You know,
you get a different flavor that doesn't work. Yeah.
Right. Right.
It's like putting French dressing on chicken or something.
Right. It's not quite. You know, it's tangy, but not in the right way.
Yeah. So like that
luckily
great.
she jumps in, and she is such an incredible person to work with, and there is no line that I write that you know I sort of send to her that she comes back and says, I don't really want to say that. She is so up for, you know, I mean, again, it always seems like we're always in every sketch we're doing some kind of freaky copulation on some level. She's always into it. She's just like, yeah, sure, this is funny, which is again, she realizes.
Comedy.
Yeah, she realizes the value of you know the joke. and she'll do anything for the joke, which is
and
so
she's got the
nice.
Timing
she
too. Just, she gets it.
Oh,
she
forget really about it, man. It just I give her a script and it's just bam, it's out of the gate. You know, like one or two things, I'll just say, oh, this is sort of like I meant this or that, and then she'll come up with her own ideas too and just be like, you know, this isn't clear. Maybe we could fix this, fix that, and it's always so much better. I mean, that just happened in this last show, show 53. We did kind of two telemarketers talking to each other, and there were a couple lines that she just made so much better. And it's it's such an incredible resource to have, you know. And she ain't too shabby to look at either, so can't complain.
Hey, that's a fact.
Oh, God.
I think I heard probably the first 8 or 9 of her podcasts.
Mm.
Well, I guess we're talking two years ago?
Three years ago. It'll
like
be
that.
3 years yeah. April, yeah.
When it was first, I think she was first considering calling it the Bathcast.
Right, right.
And then I think life happened.
Right.
And I wasn't listening to any podcast for the longest time. Then I started getting back into it and then came up with International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Nice, nice. She just did this video because she does video casts every now and then. It's called Fuck You, Fox News. It is so great. It's like 8 minutes of just pure rational thought presented with this wonderful comic underpinning.
I saw that.
If you haven't seen it, it's just
great. I saw that.
You know, with the pie chart. And it's just great. She's so good.
And it's just, you know, and even if you're not into specifically what the message is, even if you're not into specifically this is non-critical thinking, and I'm demonstrating for you that it is non-critical thinking, and it's being presented on a news program.
Right.
Part of it underscores part of what's causing these. Apart from everybody wanting to try a new thing, and when I'm talking about podcasting. Whole bunch of people that happen to have a microphone and a PC want to try something new.
Right.
I think it was Podcast Pickle actually went through their entire database middle of last year and wiped out thousands and thousands and thousands of accounts of people that did 3 podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were never heard from again.
Right.
So you've got people that'll try it for a little while and then they'll step out of it. But the ones that persist are the ones that see things like Fox News pretending to inform people when they're just presenting an agenda.
Sure, sure.
And then any other thing that they see on television. I mean, I haven't watched television. I mean, I just haven't watched television like I used to in the late 70s, early 80s at all because of just how worthless it's become to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually watch a lot of television and you have to find what you want to watch, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't watch broadcast television. For me, it's all the, you know, I have whatever it is, 300 channels on the local cable provider. And for me, it's all the, you know, Science Channel and Discovery and Science and History Channel and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you know, the VH1 Celebrity, because you need your mental sorbet every now and then, you know, and I want to see what Flavor Flav is up to, but you know, and that's just that also gives you ideas all the time too, which is just nice. So yeah,
just raw material waiting
exactly,
to be used.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you have to watch it, like you said, you have to watch it with a real awareness that okay, this is all being manipulated with some agenda. Whether, you know, for the most part, it's making money. That's the agenda, which is fine. And that's not usually ideology-based. It's cash-based, you know, and we'll go with whichever ideology is being the most profitable at the time.
What sells, yeah.
Yeah, so that's fine. We're all aware of that. So, but again, it's I always say that I think the majority of what I know is from television. Growing up, you know, knowing what to watch, having my family and my parents push PBS on me and be able to watch, you know, Nova and all that kind of cliched stuff that everybody claims that they watch, but that kind of stuff just fascinates me. And there's so many wonderfully produced shows, especially like from the BBC. The whole like Planet Earth series is just it's incredible. I don't know if you're aware of that. It's just amazing, absolutely amazing.
That's one of those things that I have on my list to pick up on DVD.
You have to check it out. I mean,
because
especially the DVD version. It's
the last major purchase like that that I've made. Because I, when I see something like that, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I have to watch this several times.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I want to watch it several times on my... And the last actual... I'm turning around and looking at it like I have to. I mean, it's not going to disappear from my shelf if I don't look directly at it. Is the original Connection series with James Burke.
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, that first series where they had the 7 inventions or 8 inventions, whatever it was, mm-hmm. that all end up being on the B-1 bomber, you know, at the end. Oh, that just blew me away. I remember seeing, whatever that was, 10, 12 years ago when I first saw that.
It was made in 1978.
78. Oh, my God. So I probably had seen, probably the third iteration of it or repeats or whatever of it.
Yeah.
So good. There's a guy I would love to sit down and have dinner with.
We just, there's a guy podcasting now. Oh, damn. What is the name of it? Oh, Hardcore History.
Okay.
His last episode is an interview with James Burke.
Really? Awesome. And, he's still writing books. He does stuff all the time. He had a Connections 3 that was on Discovery Channel a couple of years ago.
What he's actually into now is an internet-based thing that I think he's making
web,
use.
I think he calls it?
Yeah. The internet-based interconnection of all these different disciplines.
Right.
Because he always recognized the fact that the major breakthroughs come when the right hand actually does know what the left hand is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're trying to make, you're trying to make a more purple paint, and you realize, wait a minute, this seals in, we can make a refrigerator with this stuff. It's always that weird ass kind of, you never go about, but rarely do major inventions get invented with their purpose. I want to, like the incandescent bulb is one of the rare examples that, he thought we got to make an incandescent bulb, so we did that. But almost every other kind of thing, like whether it's refrigeration, I mean, that whole first Connection show was about that, about how if you wanted to invent, TV, you couldn't go about it in a straight line, and he writes
and
about,
he demonstrates that show after show. It's like none of it happened
incredible.
In a straight line.
If someone came, if Queen Victoria came to her top scientists and said, I want you guys to invent something which will send my image to millions, all of England, or all of the world, actually, instantaneously. And you can have as much money as you want to do it. Like, they wouldn't be able to do it. It wouldn't happen. You have to have that weird ping pong thing of like, hey, wait a minute. This guy realized that these radio signals do this, which meant that this guy could do this, which meant that like this guy realized that, and then all of a sudden Farlow T. Farnsworth, puts all these pieces together and says, hey, we got TV.
I just love
that kind
stuff.
Of stuff. It's so cool. Yeah, it's mind blowing. That's why I would love to
even
just
more recent than that. Even more recent than that, right over there in Pennsylvania. You're in PA, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Kansas. Kansas, the XTV station owner.
Okay.
He's a retired TV station owner. He was trying to figure out a cure for cancer.
Right.
And he figures out how to make how to burn seawater.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's still some debate as to whether or not it's actually doing what he's saying he's doing. But potentially, yeah. Right, where he infuses gold molecules into the water somehow. And then
his original idea was gold molecules that would... very much like that stuff you drink in order to make X-rays work.
Oh, right, sure, okay, right.
The minerals or the specific metals that would be introduced would somehow make it to the cancer cells. And then his idea was to bombard them with the certain radio frequencies that he knew.
And they burn out and burn
and they
the
would burn the cancer cells.
Right.
And directing a very specific frequency at the seawater.
Right.
Made it ignite, and actually, essentially, what he was burning was the hydrogen that was.
Sure.
I think the argument was that he had invented either a new, a more efficient, or a slightly different way of extracting hydrogen from water.
Right.
But again, that's the thing. It's like he was aiming for something totally different.
Exactly. Perfect example. Yeah, perfect example. And it could, something like that, if it is doing what it supposedly is doing, that could revolutionize the planet. If he is putting in less energy than he's getting out of it. Which again, there's still some debate as to whether or not he's doing what he thinks he's doing. Not that he's being deceptive, but there's just so many factors involved.
Yeah, it was pretty open about it. I mean, it went right to a lab where they supposedly duplicated it.
Yeah. Okay.
What I was confused about was, we're not talking like I've gone into research on this thing. I mean, my research has consisted of burning seawater search on YouTube.
Right.
And then that was the end of that.
It looks damn cool. Yeah.
Oh yeah. but I was confused as to why I didn't see that like across the headlines within a couple of weeks, or at least
which sometimes is a good indicator. But I guess there's a question of the radiation that he's putting into the experiment. If that is of a smaller energy overall energy input than it is from the
atmosphere.
So that's they're still debating. You know, because if you need some kind of disproportionate radiometric charge to run the thing that's stimulating the energy, you're going to be at zero or at a negative thing, even though you get this nice cool flame that looks awesome coming out of water. You still might, that's impressive, but unfortunately you have to figure out, okay, is the total mass sum of energy being put into this still lower than the energy putting out? Again, who knows? I hope he keeps working on it and we'll see what happens, but it's fascinating. But again, like you said, he wasn't trying to do that. He was trying to do something totally opposite, you know. Yeah, again, my favorite one is there's a couple. There's the person who was trying to make a malaria cure invented air conditioning.
Yep.
You know, because they thought it was the swamp gases, you know, and it was the hot temperature that caused malaria. So they basically figured, oh, if we can cool this thing down, they'll do that. And then the guy who invented, I don't know if it was saccharin or NutraSweet, was also working on some kind of a cancer cure or something like that, licked his fingers to turn a page, and it was sweet. And he realized, oh, wait a minute. This is totally sweet. Yeah. Which makes you wonder about his, you know, protocols in the lab that you can actually lick your fingers with some kind of chemical on it. But regardless, you know, again, that kind of stuff is so cool and so fascinating. So, yeah.
We have these radioactive rocks. I'll just put them in the drawer over there.
Right. Just hang on to them. Yeah, I'll put them in the trunk.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, right, right.
James Burke. If it were James Burke, we could leap anywhere.
No, he always just, you know, one of those, you get that question of who would you want to have dinner with, you know, living or dead. He always made the living list for me because just, you could just say, hi, James, and I'm sure he would just, you know, talk for 3-4 hours and it would be the most fascinating thing in the world because he just seems to have these connections at his fingertips.
That's just what impressed me the most is the fact that we're not talking, this guy is not the Hardcore History, the fellow that does the Hardcore History podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not somebody that's nationally known. This is not a major broadcaster. He's certainly competent. He certainly knows his stuff, but he's not a doctor of history. He's just a guy that's really passionate about what he's doing and what he's talking about. And I just love the fact that he was able to get on the phone with James Burke and do this interview.
That's the thing about, you know, to get back to the whole podcasting thing, and that's something that I think that this medium has that few others do, is that when you do get contacted by someone, you know they're going to be, you know, like a fan of what you do, or they're going to be, you know, if someone has been doing a podcast about, you know, history connections or whatever for a year, I mean, you can very quickly determine that, okay, they know what they're talking about, and it's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
You know? So you can get people that are complete, you know, unknowns. Somehow, if you can get in touch with someone, and there's tons of examples of that. I mean, even going back to Skepticality, you know, when they first got in touch with, before they became the official Skeptic Magazine podcast, they got in touch with James Randi and just, you know, a cold call, essentially, got in touch with him, and he spoke with them. Shermer also, and then he eventually realized, oh wait, this is a great thing we should have. Let's have you be the official podcast of Skeptic Magazine. Great. Even that guy, I forget his name. Dr. Floyd, I think is his name. He does like kind of a 15-minute, you know, science kind of jokey thing. He has used most of Stan Freeberg's to get back to Stan.
Oh, Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd.
Right. Exactly.
I think that's it.
He's like, I guess, Freeberg's supposed to be on this year at some point. I mean, he had June Foray and he had someone else was on too, you know, old bit players. Again, he's not world famous. He's not nationally known. I mean, I guess he's nationally known in as much as a podcaster is nationally known. But he's good at what he does. He has a catalog that he can show, I'm competent. I respect your work. Come on the show. It'll be great. You know?
Yeah, and when you're talking to somebody like that, I guess if you're used to the so-called traditional media,
right.
When you get on the phone with somebody like that, you realize, or hopefully the people that at least have a clue as to what podcasting is about, you realize you're talking to the engineer, you're talking to the producer, you're talking to the, you know, it's content all rolled into one. Yeah. And somebody that's not under somebody else's thumb, somebody that hasn't got hasn't got a major, I don't know, a corporate media
agenda
or somebody looking over their shoulder. They're doing it because they like to do it.
Yeah, and you can talk for as long as you want. You can have the subject matter be anything you want, you know, that relates to that guest. It's pretty amazing. And you have a guaranteed audience too, which is also the other thing. It's not like we're going to give you 2 minutes on the Today Show and you know, and that's it. You have to encapsulate what you're doing, you know, in this soundbite, you know, that, and we'll have to cut you for a cooking segment anyway, you know. It's great.
Yeah. How many of them have just gone on these documentaries and they're sitting there and they've probably done 6 or 7 of them before and they know that the 3 hours of taping that they've done in whatever location that they've been flown to is going to be turned into 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, if they're lucky, let alone, Shermer talks about this all the time. He gets interviewed for stuff and they'll use 2 sentences of his. They'll talk to him for 2 hours and they literally use, you know, it's 30 seconds, 40 seconds. You know, sometimes even out of context or in a weird thing. So, yeah. Whereas here, if anything, podcasters have a problem of using way too much of the raw feed often. But that's nice. And that's the beauty of the medium.
There's another fellow out there. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was recommended, found recently, actually, by one of the IDDFOS listeners, the Encaffeinated One, who himself has a radio show up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Name of the show is Bells in the Bat Free. Have you heard that one?
No, okay.
Fellow's name is John Bell. He's another one of those incredible vocal performers with engineering skill that puts it all together in a really very entertaining package.
Cool.
He's a DJ out in California. You've got some radio experience too, I think, you mentioned.
Just a little bit, yeah. I mean, there's a local college station. The Lehigh University is here. That's a pretty big campus. And I had done interviews there sort of in my music persona when I was doing some local concerts and tried to get some promotional stuff happening. And the program director kind of liked my stuff and became a friend and kept saying, you know, we have a whole community program here. If you're ever interested in just being a DJ and just spinning whatever you want, let me know. So I got in touch with him, again, sort of as a precursor to the podcasting thing, almost as a school for myself. Where I thought, let me do a summer's worth of shows, you know, on Tuesday night. And I asked him, I said, can I do kind of a free-form talking thing, not really playing music? And he said, you can do whatever you want. As long as you don't curse, you can do whatever you want. I was like, cool. So whatever it was, last summer, from, I guess, the end of May to September, every Tuesday night from midnight to 2 or 11 to 2, whatever it was, I did 3 hours of kind of the precursor of the Geologic Podcast. You know,
so you got a little warm-up.
Exactly, and it was much more of a challenge because I had to do 3 hours, which it was harder and easier because I could play music if I wanted to. I did have to do PSAs. I did have to do some radio breaks and things like that, but it wasn't quite as focused as the podcast is. You know, it's like 45 minutes in and out, say what you've got to say and kind of get out. There I could really just kind of go off in these diatribes because literally no one was listening. You know, if there were 50 people listening,
oh,
I would have been shocked. But that wasn't the point. You know, I was recording them and trying to learn, oh, this works, this doesn't work. You know, like, this could have been better, this could have been worse. Here's a sketch, whatever.
Okay. So you weren't really considering it a high-pressure situation?
Oh, God, no, not at all.
Okay,
at
good.
All. And it was perfect. I mean, again, college radio, Tuesday nights from midnight to 2. I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah, all right.
But again, it was just a reason for me to go do it every week because I agreed to do it. So that ended, the college staff came back, and that was kind of when I said, you know what, I have kind of enough of a log of ideas that I can maybe relate it to the podcast. So, you know, my mom, I do this thing on the podcast where my mom calls in, my actual mother calls in, and she reads lyrics from Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And then we just end up talking about stuff. It's just an excuse for us to kind of, you know, bullshit together. So we did that on the radio show. That always ended up being fun. A couple other, you know, interesting fauna we did, religious morning of the week we did. And those things translated well and kind of were like, okay, they worked in that context. They're really going to work here.
She had an out-of-town tryout for real, I mean, with that whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like, you know, when the Marx Brothers took coconuts on the road before they filmed it. It's kind of that idea, you know? So just not nearly as funny. Yeah, but again, you know, and I would be very nervous just from the technical side of it, because you had this kind of thing and you had a live feed and you had to do the public service announcements were a pain because you had to do one every 28 minutes so that the radio station could keep its nonprofit status as a college thing, blah, blah, blah. So if you missed one, you would get that, you know, that light would come on and the station manager would be calling saying, you missed it, you know, you got to play one of these things. And,
ew.
And that I didn't like. So that kind of got to be a pain. And that was probably the main reason that I sort of wanted to stop doing it, because even in that context of that freeform thing, there was still stuff I had to do. I had to log in. I had to keep notes on all the stuff, which ones I played and the songs I played and blah, 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 blah. And that to me was just, you know, that already was too much of a hassle. So I like it. I love this podcasting thing that I can do whatever the hell I want or not do whatever the hell I want. I don't keep track. I don't keep whatever. It's just so freeing that you can just focus on the funny, hopefully, and just put it out. So, but again, A.J. Fritz, who is the programming director, to his unending credit that he just gave me a three-hour slot, pretty much sight unseen, because he liked me in an interview. That's really cool.
Wow.
So I'm appreciative to him. And those are available on my podcast. We archived all those shows. We did 13 shows. They're all archived on geologicrecords.net. So you can kind of see me fumbling around and trying to learn what's what. A little more rambling and a little more open than the podcasts are. But there's some good bits there, too.
Vintage George
Vintage,
Rob.
Right.
There we go.
The progenitor excellent. Of the podcast. Yeah.
That's excellent. I had something in my head that I was about to ask you, and it totally went out.
Mm.
Oh, the one of the things that... first of all, I can only say this in relation to my experience with International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, and
okay.
That is the fact that one of the things that I've come to learn, because it's been an incredible learning experience doing this, the impressive part, again, to me, is the fact that you've done 52 shows in 1 year. I'm up to, like, episode 68 or something, if you mm-hmm. count all of the things that I've put out.
Right.
But officially... just did my episode 52, and I started. excuse me, I started like in April of 06.
Okay.
But the did I just make that noise?
Yeah. Good.
Wow. The I did it again. Let me move this. The fans. There we go. That's
nice.
Better. The fans of the show, the people that download it and listen to it,
yeah,
have just been these incredible, incredible people.
Yeah.
That, I mean, they make the show now. They are the show.
Mm.
As far as what my podcast has turned into, but if anybody needs to get an idea of what George Robb has generated in terms of how people appreciate him, folks, check out the bonus episode that was just recently in the feed. An entirely fan-generated episode of the Geologic Podcast, put together by the people that have enjoyed his work so much. And I don't know how I guess I kind of know how it makes you feel. I know how it makes me feel when folks write in and show that kind of appreciation.
I was floored. I mean, I was absolutely floored. And that's been the biggest surprise since I started this, is how much of the sort of fan-generated or the fan influence that there is. I mean. The inherent thing about message board and comment boards, is the crudeness and the kind of sheer moronic discussion that usually abounds in those types of formats or those forums.
Yeah, you generally find it when it's that easy, yeah.
Yeah, whereas on my comment thing, I mean, it's some of the best, smartest comments are made, you know, that just add to the show. People are, I mean, somehow my comment board has got this reputation of, like, you better spell everything correctly. I'm not even sure how that happened. It somehow sort of happened. Like, it might have been one or two casual comments I made, but, you know, people will type something and there'll be a typo, and then, like, two comments later they come back on and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I meant to say, you know, immoral with two M's. I'm sorry. And it's like, yeah, okay. Which is, hey, man, that's great.
Man.
You know, if that's the reputation my comment section is going to have, that, like, if you want to comment here, you better be able to be up to snuff. But yeah, so that I always say I have the best commenters in podcasting. But the wonderful Carrie P, she does the Signal, which is a Firefly fan cast podcast. She's involved with that. She is a, you know, she's just this incredible listener of mine, and she organized as a.
That's where I heard her voice before.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard her. I'm listening to the intro, and I'm like, wait a minute. She's in. I've heard this.
Carolyn Parker Jones. She's Parkinson Jones. She's amazing. She's just amazing, and she organized this thing.
I never made that connection. Holy crap!
Yeah, she got in touch with Misinformation, who was my incredible partner here at the podcast. My tech person. And they all surprised me, and she got in touch with other fans, and they did, like you said, this 45-minute version of, you know, kind of a roast/podcast. And I was blown away. I mean, I was absolutely blown away that someone would take time to, you know, to me, it's amazing that anyone wants to listen to what I'm doing, let alone react to it, let alone, like, doubly react to it by creating their own thing as a tribute. I mean, I was speechless. I was speechless. And it's just, it's the most surprising thing. Their reaction, you know, you said you wanted to say vibraphone to me, you know, when I walked around Dragon Con, and a complete stranger who is not related to me or to whom I do not owe money or who has never met me before walks up to me and says vibraphone. It just floors me. It just absolutely floors me. And I'm so appreciative and so genuinely humbled by it.
It just doesn't get more cool than that. It really doesn't.
It absolutely
amazing.
Doesn't. And, you know, I think it happened to me the first time when I went to Balticon, which is in Baltimore, where I had strangers coming up to me. And all of a sudden, the first thought in my head was like, how could Sting not be the biggest asshole in the world? Like, maybe he is. And you know what? When you have complete strangers, you know, like anywhere in the world saying, oh, I love what you do. Like, I could barely fit out of the conference room because my head was so gigantic, you know, and that was the first thought, like, you know, someone who is internationally renowned or famous, like, you know, Woody Allen or Madonna or whoever, you know, or the president or whatever.
Yeah, it's all like, levels
how could
of notoriety.
Not be the biggest cock on the planet, you know, when you have complete strangers again and again and again saying, oh, you're great, or just knowing who you are. So that, and it was such a small, I mean, it was three people came up to me that I didn't know and said, vibraphone, love your show. And it was like, wow, I am the prince of the universe, you know? And so it's nice to be able to say, okay, you still suck. Just, it's a couple of people just like what you do. That's doesn't change anything. You're still who you are, you know?
Nothing like so that to a, blow your sense of perspective completely out of the water.
Oh, totally. You have to keep saying, like, all right, just chill, you know, just chill. You're still a schmuck. Always remember, you know. So it's that's been the biggest and the most pleasant surprise of the whole process is the fanaticism of the fans and the loyalty of the fans and the quality of the fans, you know, that they remember stuff and they get stuff. And I put, you know, I always say this. I love The Simpsons because they reward you for paying attention. And I wanted to do that same thing from show one. I wanted to reward people who were paying attention and draw you in and have you not know what's real, what's not real, what's continuing, you know. Yeah, it's so great when people get it. And there's so many that do. And I will so much sooner take one person that really gets it than thousands who think it's, it's okay. You know, give me that one person who will listen to every show and will pore over the details of every show to find the hidden stuff, as opposed to 100 that are like, yeah, he's okay. You know, because that one person you'll have forever. And you know that one person will buy everything you put out and will read everything you write, you know. And I'd rather have super fans like that, that are dedicated. You know, that's that whole Zappa ethos. He would rather have, you know, 50,000 fans cross country that he knows will come to every show and will buy everything he does than have millions that occasionally, and then we'll disappear in a year or two or 5 years or whatever. Give me a loyal fan base anytime.
It's the creativity that's displayed just in showing the appreciation, and just the other thing is people that are starting out on their own to come up with their own shows. I mean, I've gotten materials. I'm tempted now. I'm like, I want to go down the list of names of people that have sent in just incredible audio pieces to my show, and I'm not going to do it because I know I'm going to leave somebody out.
Right.
And I hate doing that. I hate, like, I mentioned, you know, six or seven names, and I forget that eighth name.
Of course.
But they talk about getting into their own thing.
Yeah.
And you listen to some of their stuff, or you read some of their emails, and you think, you know, whoever it is, you should like plug in a microphone because you know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. That's the first thing I say when someone sends me a bit to play. Like, I don't, for as much as I appreciate the effort, I don't really play other people's bits on my show. It's just sort of something I decided from the beginning, where it was like, I don't want it to be kind of a Hall of Mirrors. Some shows that I listen to tend to kind of get almost too self-referential, where it kind of just becomes kind of a cul-de-sac or more of a maze where it's, you know, a reference to a reference of a reference of a reference. You know, someone sends something in, and I kind of didn't want that to happen. So I sort of had this rule that I don't really play other people's stuff. But when someone sends me a thing, the first thing I say is, hey, you just have a show here. Yeah, maybe it's 3 minutes long, but you just have a show. You know, this should be your thing. Why does it have to be, you know, reflected through my show? This is your thing.
Yeah.
And it's great or it's terrible or it's whatever it is, but it's yours. I highly recommend you put this up somewhere. You know, and people respond to it. And it's happened a couple times, you know, where someone will say like, oh, I have an idea for a sketch. Would you want to do something like this? And I'll be like, hey, man, it's your idea. Do it. You can do it. There's nothing preventing you from doing this.
Yeah.
So that's what's so nice and so, so democratic about this format.
Yeah. And if it's crap, nobody's going to listen to it.
Yeah.
And if it's good, people are going to listen to it.
The word will spread. Yeah.
It's the audience that's making the decision. And then
you can reap the rewards too. And then it's 100% yours. That's what's so nice is that, you know, if it blows, you got to pay the price. But if it's great, man, it's all you.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
We had a show right in response to this this book that came out. Well, it's hardly a book; it was practically a pamphlet. Oh, great! Now I can't remember the name of the damn thing. The Cult of the Amateur.
Okay.
Where this Andrew Keen,
right,
wrote a book essentially saying that this whole podcasting and internet thing was destroying the culture. And
right.
Breaking down these bastions of networks that protected us from poor quality stuff.
Oh, okay.
That nurtured talent, that found and nurtured talent and protected us from, you know, the masses.
That's what they said about Gutenberg too. So it's like,
yeah, basically,
you know what?
Yeah,
screw you.
And it was kind of like, and I pretty much put it in the show notes. It's like, all right, folks, tonight we're going to be taking wax at a punching clown, an inflatable punching clown.
Right,
it's just going to be the easiest, because it was such a ridiculous premise, an absolutely ridiculous premise. And
quality is quality.
Yeah, and the people that are actually going to decide it are the people, is the audience.
Exactly.
The consumer.
What's the difference between someone, you know, writing a diary, you know, in their own hand, which they keep under the bed that no one looks at, and someone doing a podcast, which might be, you know, self-indulgent that no one listens to? Like, what's the difference? You know, it just happens to be available for the public. But if it stinks and no one wants to listen to it, no one will listen to it. And you move on, you know? Like, what is the difference? Just because someone wants to put it out there and make it available if someone would be interested, that somehow is diluting the quality of what's available? No, quality is quality. Who gives a shit how big the ocean is?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to catch a fish, you're going to catch a fish.
And the major change, when it comes right down to it, when you really get down to the bare bones of it, it's the new factor is the method of distribution.
Absolutely.
The new factor is the fact that, you can, I mean, people have always been able to do, you know, reel-to-reel or cassettes or 8-track or whatever.
Right.
They've always had, the technology's always been out there. It's now, suddenly, in whatever method you choose, now, of course, it's primarily digital, you put it out there, but it's listened to in England, it's listened to in Dubai, in Australia, South America.
All of
a sudden, you're looking at all these dots appearing all over the world, and you're thinking to myself, a year ago, I couldn't get the people, you know, that I work with to listen to anything I had to say.
Family members to listen to, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
And all of a sudden, it's, it's
well, you look at every step of technological advancement is always sort of criticized or stopped as somehow diluting the purity of the artistic endeavor that uses that technology. You know, when synthesizers came along in the 40s and 50s, you know, orchestra leaders said, this is going to be the end of the orchestra. This is going to be the end of creative music. And it's like, it didn't happen.
Mm.
you know, when you had home recording stuff that came up, you know, oh, it's going to be, this will be it. Everyone will be able to, you know, use this stuff, and it's going to make everything that much worse. You know, the creative spark is the creative spark. That never changes. The tools that you can use to facilitate that creative spark and make that creative spark a reality, a product available for others, why should its ease of use or its universality somehow be a negative thing? You know, like the same way that Pink Floyd got criticized because, oh, they're using synthesizers, you know, does that take the soul away from the music? You know, and Roger Waters is like, no, this is a tool. A piano is a tool. You know, just because it's acoustic and it's 100 years old or 150 years old doesn't make it any less of a tool than a synth or than GarageBand. If the person using the tool, you know, I could have the most amazing set of woodworking tools. I will never be able to make a dresser, you know, or it would be a pretty awful dresser. the bureau I would make with the most amazing state-of-the-art, you know, laser chalk, laser chalk line stuff, craftsman tools, it's going to look like shit because I don't have the skills as a woodworker. I don't have that spark of creativity. You know, the same way that you could give the most, you know, horrible musician GarageBand and they'll approach something that, yeah, okay, maybe it'll, you know, it'll have the equivalent of me putting this wonderful stain on wood, but, you know, there's no construction behind it. There's no thought behind it. There's no art to the artifice of it, you know? So that's what it is. So people just get so upset because they think, oh, it's going to, you know, somehow you're impeding upon the work that I've done in the past, you know, because I've gone to school for music and I've learned how to, you know, play a drum beat. So how dare you have a drum beat loop available to you? It's going to take away. It's like, no, it's not taking away anything from you, because if that person doesn't know how to write a song, they don't know how to write a song. What it might do is it might facilitate that person's talent or skill that eventually they might become this amazing songwriter because they don't have to worry about finding a drummer who's going to show up on time to a rehearsal to help them write a song. You know, and that's all positive.
That's all. What you were saying before, precisely the same thing happened with Tomita. I mean, he's got it written out on the back of his album. I forget which one. Esahu Tomita, Snowflake Jet Dancing, all that electronic stuff. He was catching crap from his contemporaries because they kept saying, "Well, you're using artificial instruments."
Yeah, right. What does that mean?
And he turned around and he said, "What is a violin?"
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you go to the violin orchard and pull that off of a tree?
Right.
No,
right.
A violin is just as artificial as any other instrument.
Absolutely.
And it's like you said, it's the tools that are used.
Yeah,
I actually was going to ask you about that at some point. And it was one of those things that never made my list because I can't remember crap from one minute to the next.
Right.
Was the fact that a lot of music production, we're at an hour and 10 here. I should stop and ask you, is this cool? I mean, you want to keep going?
Yeah, I'm cool.
I don't want to take up all your time. I got plenty of time.
We're good.
Okay, cool. Music production being, we're in the age of loops. Actually,
right.
we're exiting the age of loops now. We're getting into probably stuff that I haven't even heard of.
Right.
Where you can just sample and construct these, arguably you can call them compositions.
Sure.
When you're taking bits and pieces of a whole bunch of other people's things and combining them in the way that may sound good to you, may not sound good to others. I guess I've kind of heard a little bit of how you feel about that. I know when I was in, we're talking the 80s now, of course, but electronic music was certainly prevalent in the early 70s. Wendy Carlos, Walter Carlos, however you want to refer, was the one of the pioneers, Theremin and the rest of them, the pioneers that came before them. So it's been around for a good long time. I dated a musician. She was a flute player who would physically become ill. She couldn't hear it. She couldn't listen to it.
Really?
It was almost like making her listen to chalk on nails on a chalkboard, or whatever.
Right.
And I couldn't understand it because I thought it was fantastic. And organic musicians, people that have put in the time and energy to learn how to actually sight read. you know, their instrument, which is a lot harder than people probably know.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you've got somebody that can afford $200 or $300 worth of, admittedly, if you're spending $500 on low end stuff, but you can get together something that sounds relatively good.
Right.
When you leave the when you leave Ash Music.
Right. Right. You know, again, it's to me the stuff that's most effective with synthetic, for lack of a better term, synthetic instruments, is when you don't try to use them to reproduce instruments that exist. You know, using a trumpet sound on a keyboard is never going to sound as good as using a trumpet, a well-played trumpet, the best sample, the best whatever, it's never going to sound better than a trumpet player. It might be easier than finding a trumpet player, but, you know, with all things being equal, it's never going to sound better. You're better off, you know, you can use trumpet textures to thicken out a real brass section. You know, I do that with the funk band. You know, when we play, we have a three-piece horn section, and some tunes you play, and our keyboard player just thickens it out a little bit with a little bit of a synth horn kind of sound. And again, it just sounds better, you know. But it's utilizing the instrument to help what's going on. I think using technology, if you use it poorly, it sounds poor. If you use it well, it sounds good. You know, I can always tell when someone's using a loop and they don't know what they're doing. You know, when they're using a loop out of laziness, when they're using a loop out of desperation or whatever, or just to get things going.
Or they just opened the box and they're playing with it.
Right, right. You can usually tell that. Whereas when you look at someone like, you know, I don't know, a Peter Gabriel. Well, that's my favorite example, is you look at the band Genesis, okay? And Peter Gabriel left Genesis, and the three of Genesis boys were four originally, but the three guys were left over. They all had access to the same technology. Peter Gabriel used drum machines and synths and went off and created kind of his really interesting, still very popular, but very kind of, pseudo-experimental, dark, technologically interesting music. Genesis went off and kind of, you know, they did their kind of much lighter, much more, you know, again, also just as popular, but a lighter drum machines, to me, kind of ruined Genesis, because you could put it would start playing and it would play, and so all the songs ended up being, you know, in very duple meter, very simple. There weren't those weird little breaks that would happen when people make mistakes, because the machine just chugs away. Whereas Gabriel, again, access to the same kinds of instruments, just said, all right, this is a drum machine, but we're not going to use it as a drummer. We're going to use it as a drum machine. You know, we're not going to use this synth to be a guitar. We're going to use it as a synth or whatever. And to me, his music from that time when he left is much more interesting than the Genesis music or where they ended up.
Well, I could be totally, this is totally, absolutely outside my experience or expertise, but remembering Peter Gabriel, as far as his early stuff went, he really embraced technology in lots of different levels. I mean, I think he was among the first musicians to really make use of computer graphics.
Sure.
In his presentation as well. Sure. So he was really...
Oh, yeah, the whole stage thing. I mean, he was ahead of the curve anyway, just the whole 70s thing while he was still with Genesis. But even after that, it's pretty incredible stuff.
Now, the other... I guess the other, the elephant in the room as far as music goes and the whole digital medium is digital rights management.
Right.
I mean, there's such a thing as beating a dead horse until it's, like, paced.
Right.
But, I mean, I know I've got a musician on the other end of this line here, and if anybody's opinion counts as far as this goes, I would think yours does. So far as how quickly and easily perfect copies can be made of people's performances and albums and things like that.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at both sides of this whole question, and it of course it doesn't limit itself to the record labels. It's the movie industry. It's the television industry. It's all these people that are looking at this digital revolution looming over them.
Right.
And knowing that they could very well be in a situation where they just can't afford to do what they do anymore. I don't know. What do you think about
it? Yeah, you know, again, I think it's some more of the same. You know, that technological, it's a new step in technology that people tend to oppose. The old guard tends to oppose and the new guard tends to embrace. From all indications, digital copies tend to promote music in a positive way, from what I can determine. I've made lots of my stuff available for free, and I think for the most part it does promote people purchasing them.
That is something that the old guard just can't wrap their heads around.
I know.
And I'm going to admit to the same mindset myself.
Yeah, it's weird.
Personally,
but look at Radiohead. I mean, it's a perfect example. You know, they're kind of setting the bar here.
Mm-hmm. Radiohead, the not just music, but the publishing business.
Right.
Sarah from Does My Geek Look Big in This was telling me about in an earlier Skype chat was telling me about Scott Sigler,
right.
who not right. only recorded his novel. Did an audio version of his novel that he put out for free, gave out tons and tons of PDFs of the novel for free.
And then on Amazon. Number seven. Yeah,
and I'm thinking to myself, how does this...
Because I think fans appreciate the work. Ultimately, if someone appreciates what you do, they will pay for it. Even if they have it in their pocket already, I think they will pay for it. And it's a wonderful example of... If you have a product that you know an audience will appreciate, put it out there, give it to them. If they like it, they will pay for it. And I know it's a very anti-Western concept.
It is. It just goes against everything that everybody's been.
But it's proven again and again. It's proven again and again, and it's hard to wrap our mind around it. But that's what's so nice about this focused marketing is that if you know your audience, and he knew where to put those PDFs, he put them into those. Podcasts wherever they were, and he knew these were going to be fans because he knew the product he had was worth it, and he rolled the dice and he scored friggin' big time.
Yeah, but, I got a movie deal out of one of them, I think.
Something like that, and a book deal and some other stuff. And
yeah,
it's very antithetical to how we have been taught the market works, but it's art. It's not a shirt or a car or food. Even food. I mean, I know there are restaurants that are. Very successful that you pay what you want. I've heard about these restaurants again and again and again. You always like think, God, how does that work? But somehow, if you satisfy the customer, there's always going to be someone who's going to try to screw you. That's just going to happen regardless. But for the most part, if a satisfied customer will pay, you just have to sort of be able to focus it and funnel it and trust it. And it's very hard to do because there's an initial outlay that happens. But, you know, the same thing on a certain level was happening in the music industry when bands would go out and play concerts. You know, bands weren't paid to go on tour. You know, people had to pay for the concert tickets, but bands weren't paid for it. You know, bands get screwed every step of the way they get screwed. So here it's almost like, you know what, I'm going to give you, this is like radio play on a certain level, but you get to kind of keep it, you know. I mean, when audio cassettes were available and you could record music off the radio, oh my God, that was going to be the end of the record industry. That was going to be the end. That's it. You know, how can we have blank cassettes available? Oh, no, and you know, no, that didn't happen. So it's sort of the same thing. You know, people get to hear it, get to realize they like it, and then we'll go and pay for it. It's hard to fathom. But my CD sales have just, they go up and up and up. My digital distribution sales go up and up and up. The more people hear stuff, the more they want to spend money on it, and it's so hard to fathom, but somehow that's where I'm at.
That's excellent. You know? Good deal.
It's great, yeah.
I got nothing.
Okay. Listen, man, this has been,
like
this
I said,
been
totally,
real...
totally informal, whatever, you know.
No, this has been a real pleasure. It's so nice to be able to just have a conversation, which is sort of going both ways. So often these interviews are so one-sided, and it feels like you're not only pulling teeth, but you're like pulling down the door to be able to pull down the teeth.
Yeah.
So thank you for just being able to just chat. It's been wonderful.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time to talk to talk
absolutely,
to,
man.
You know, and it's just thank you for Skype Chat 7.
Absolutely. And, yeah, stay in touch. Let's do it again sometime.
And folks, go and check out the Geologic Podcast.
Please do.
At www.geologicpodcast.com. Thank you once again, George Robb. And yeah, we will do this again.
Yes, please. Soon. Thanks so much, man. Thanks to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Have an excellent night.
Alrighty. Take care.
All right. Take it easy. Bye bye. And there it was. A splendid chat. Wonderful time. I really do hope
I get to hook up again on Skype with George Robb just to get into some stuff that, as usual, I kick myself after the fact, things that I kind of wish we had gotten into that we didn't. What else would you need to know about George Robb to give you an indication of who he is and what he does? How about somebody that writes songs for the elements? And I mean the periodic table of the elements, each getting their own song. You get to hear some of that if you listen to the Geologic Podcast. I would love to have heard a story or two about some of his on-the-road performance nightmares that may not have made his show, although, of course, you can treat yourself to some of those, too, by listening to the Geologic Podcast. They're just a buttload of fun. I identify with them personally because of the few years that I spent in touring children's theater and in doing theater in general. He also had a very interesting concept about music. Now, this gets really down into some fine detail. One show in particular, I can't remember which one it was. His ideas on the concept of music not being an international language, not being something that is universally understood, but that, in fact, different messages across different cultures are relayed through different types of music that we would never recognize. I wanted to get into that a little bit. If you are interested in hearing more interview material from George Robb, he certainly, of course, has links on his site. One of the ones that I found today, actually, is a television interview, a program called Community Spotlight, and it's from 2004. If you want a video interview for more Who is George Robb? Well, I'm going to thank you very much for listening. And, of course, once again, thank George Robb for a terrific Skype chat number 7. I hope to come back with further Skype chats with lots of other folks, but they happen as they can, as you well know. I'll make more concerted efforts to come up with some more. But in the meantime, I look forward to episode 54 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I hope both old and a few new listeners might join us for that. That, of course, will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.